Greetings, greetings once again to all my enemies and all my friends. Well, you may have heard the news, but stand by now for the worldview. That's right, it's the Weekly Worldview, and I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back. It's the show where we don't take calls. We don't tolerate sponsors, but we do just get right to it. And we're going to move right into the politics file, where Joe Biden has nominated Gail Connolly Manchin for, let's see, what has he nominated her for here, too? As Assistant Secretary of something or other, actually. Yeah. Oh, wait a second. Not Assistant Secretary, but Co-Chair. Co-chair of the Appalachian Regional Commission. Now, you may not be aware, if you're uninitiated, Joe Biden is the president of the United States because the ever-present forces of darkness chose to select him during the last fake election. And when I say fake, I mean fake, phony, fraud, fake, that's all. So he's the president now, and Joe Manchin is a conservative Democrat. Now think about that. A conservative Democrat. Because we know, if we listen to the Weekly Worldview every week, that conservative Republicans are actually liberals. So what is a conservative Democrat? Who knows? It's a Democrat who knows that he has power because he's presumed to be someone who could go this way or that way. And when the Senate's 50-50, Joe Manchin suddenly becomes enormously powerful, possibly, potentially. So what does Joe Biden do? He nominates Manchin's wife to be co-chair of the Appalachian Regional Commission, which WorldNet Daily reports is an economic organization that tries to boost investments in 13 states. But we all know what it really is. It's a government bureaucracy that tries to hire relatives and mistresses and peddle nefarious political influence in all 50 states is what it is. And she's been nominated to be the co-chair. So in the past, you see, when politicians wanted to hire their dim-witted relatives and mistresses and wanted to peddle influence, they would put someone like Joe Manchin's wife on the board of a nonprofit, and there'd be three or four degrees of separation from the politician doing the bribing to the person receiving the bribe. But now that the ruling left has assumed total power, they don't even need to try to hide it anymore. Biden just puts her on the commission. She'll probably make $150,000 a year plus expenses. And those are very expensive expenses when you're someone like, what's her name here? Gail Connolly Manchin. That's not her middle name, by the way, Connolly. That's her maiden name. That's, yeah, because she never dropped it because she's a feminist piece of garbage. Oh, she's also an educator. She's a teacher, according to WorldNet Daily. Gail Manchin is a teacher and former president of the West Virginia State Board of Education. So what does that mean? That means that the murder-suicide of Western civilization can, in some significant part, be laid at her feet. That's right. And the feet of her husband. She taught it. The murder-suicide of Western civilization, I said. She taught it. Her husband codified it into law. So they both have participated in the murder-suicide of Western civilization. And while she may not be a full-on doctor like Jill Biden, she's very smart. She's a teacher, and her bona fides are not in dispute. Here at the Weekly Worldview, we want to thank Joe Biden for confirming the fact that being a leftist means never having to say you're sorry or even hide the fact that you are peddling political influence and outright bribing people. That's what it means these days. Now, speaking of leftists, I want to go to the Bolsheviks Are Blushing file, where at hearings a couple weeks ago, no one in the Senate, there on the Judiciary Committee, confronted the FBI director, Mr. Wray, with the now retracted story that Officer Brian Sicknick was murdered by Trump supporters, beaten to death with a fire extinguisher. Republicans, according to AmericanGreatness.com, Republicans missed a golden opportunity not just to expose the New York Times' primary role in seeding the bogus account, but also to confront their Democrat colleagues who voted to convict Donald Trump partially based on the notion that his comments led to the death of a police officer. That's right. According to the House Democrat impeachment memo written up against Donald Trump, they said, quote, the insurrectionist killed a Capitol Police officer by striking him in the head with a fire extinguisher. That's in the official record of the Congress of the United States. It never happened. And no Republicans brought it up at the hearing. Why? Because being a leftist, being part of the ruling left, means never having to actually investigate anything. And most of the Republicans sitting in Congress, in the Senate and in the House, are part of the ruling left. Everybody says they said this and they said that. Well, you know what they say. They say these new variants of the coronavirus means that the pandemic could last for 2 years. Who's they? Who's they? They is the ruling left. They are the people who just took down America, installed a puppet president, and are now in total control. And I can name them by name if you need me to. But for now, I'm just going to say they. Joe Biden's up there with them. Kamala Harris is with them. Barry Ho's with them. And George Soros. And I can name them all by name if you want me to name they. But they are very well established, and that's what they say. All right. Now, but the Republicans say very little, especially when it comes to issues like the death of Brian Sicknick after the, the dust up on the Capitol took place January 6th, and Sicknick died either the 7th or the 8th, I forget. He had some sort of brain aneurysm or some sort of stroke or something. And apparently was never actually struck. Anyway, major news organizations, according to American Greatness, major news organizations have forgotten about Sicknick altogether. The Washington Post ran 82 articles, editorials, and op-eds since January 7th about the killing of Officer Sicknick. And now nothing. Crickets. The media and lawmakers on both sides achieve their common goal of weaponizing the officer's death. The D.C. Medical Examiner's Office refuses to release Sicknick's autopsy report. By the way, his body was cremated, so there's nothing more to see here, folks. Just move on. Everyone has moved on, according to AmericanGreatness.com, with the exception of his grieving family, friends, and colleagues, who now surely realize their loved one was used in the most despicable way imaginable. By the most despicable people in power. Despicable, I tell you, they are. And if Brian Sicknick's family, at least one member of his family, doesn't stand up and say something, well, they're just an embarrassment then, that's all. But for somehow the ruling left somehow manages to kill people or use dead people, I should say that in this case, because we don't know that they actually killed Brian Sicknick. Hillary Clinton was nowhere near the place, as far as we know. But they tend to use dead people and discard them, and then their families tend to be okay with it. And people get endowments, and people get salaries and retirement. It's really strange how they work. Let's move from the left, from the crazed, maniacal, frothing at the mouth left, to the leftist right. Yes, the leftist right, I said. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, a fine example of the leftist right. He wants the state of Florida to allocate over $100 million so that the state's education system can be, quote, a national leader in civics education, unquote. So that's the supposedly conservative governor of Florida who wants to fund the state educating children. And I know for most of you, you think that's normal, that the state educates children. It's not normal. The idea of the state educating children comes down from Karl Marx through Adolf Hitler and to them from every tyrant ever in all of history. Before that, free people, especially in America, educated their children, often through small hometown groups and small organizations, supervised by the parents. But no, now the state does it, and it seems normal to everyone because everyone's insane. The ruling left has driven everyone insane. Mr. DeSantis, part of the leftist right, he addresses critical race theory. And he says he's going to keep it out of public education in the state of Florida. He calls critical race theory a politicized academic fad. He calls it a fad, yes. He says teaching kids to hate their country and hate each other is not worth one red cent. And all of the Republicans in the audience went, it's not none of my tax dollars going for that. And I'm thinking to myself, what do you mean it's not worth one red cent? Teaching kids to hate their country and to hate each other is, it's evil, it's wicked, it's probably criminal. I mean, the money is like 11th or 12th on the list of why it's bad to indoctrinate kids to hate each other and to hate their country. Mostly because you inoculate them from the gospel and it leads to mass murder and world wars. How about all those? No, I'm worried about the red cents over there on the leftist right. That's the thing. It's always just money with these guys. The Republicans. The free market is what we need here. Miami-Dade superintendent. Who is this guy? Oh, now this is one of the leftist left. Not one of the leftist right. Miami-Dade superintendent Alberto Carvalho. He said this in response to DeSantis's fairly weak effort against critical race theory. Here's what the superintendent Alberto said. We do not politicize our teaching. We do not allow ideology to permeate our classroom. Okay. And he lisped that out. DeSantis urged the state to be frugal and use the funds already available from the CARES Act and subsequent federal appropriations, and don't get any more money, and don't teach any critical race theory. Uh-huh. So did he say they're going to keep, did he actually use the term critical race theory? Anyway, at least in this story, Governor DeSantis did not use the term critical race theory, which, by the way, it is not an academic fad. It's not a politicized academic fad. It is an organized, well-directed plan conceived to take down America and cause world war and mass murder, genocide on a level that has never been experienced in all of human history, is what critical race theory is about. It's about planting the seeds in the younger generation so that in a generation from now, they slaughter one another on a scale that's unimaginable. So not only should it not be funded, the people who teach it should be arrested, put on trial. But no, Governor DeSantis says he wants to take away the... All right, get out of here with that, the leftist right, Governor DeSantis, please. I knew the minute you ran under your desk during the initial freak out, flip out, panic over the allegedly novel coronavirus that you were easily bamboozled and that you were just a typical slope-shouldered leftist-right Republican, and I got no use for you. Real quickly, from the decline and fall file, look what the Navy's asking officers to read. This is from their professional reading program. Ibrahim X. Kendi's How to Be an Anti-Racist. Uh-huh. This is for naval officers. Gemma Hartley's Fed Up, Emotional Labor, Women in the Way Forward. This is for our war fighters. Yep. And then there's another book, Sexual Minorities in Politics, An Introduction. Mm-hmm. That's right, Lieutenant. This is what we'd like to see on you. That's it, Admiral. We want to see this. And then, that book, by the way, is A History of the LGBT Rights Movement and the Current State of Sexual Minorities. So that's what our war fighters will be pondering as the Chinese vessels storm through the straits. Our guys will be sitting in their bunk pondering the unstraits. I'm holding out for a hero till the end of the night. going? And we're back. So we're looking for here. Speaking of heroes and all heroic, let's go to the Army.
Now the Army.
From the Decline and Fall file. The Army's Twitter account was recently ridiculed, according to the Washington Examiner, after it boasted of its efforts to increase diversity in the force. Forget warfighting ability. Forget destroying the enemy. Forget how to better blow things up. No. Diversity. The Army tweeted, let's see here. Here is a tweet from the Army's Office of Chief Diversity. I don't know if that's the name of it, but Chief Army Officer of Diverse, whatever. The Army tweeted on Twitter, which is where you tweet, I guess. Why would you tweet anywhere else? The Army tweeted, quote, "Extremism can tear apart cohesive teams. Colonel Timothy Holman is the Army's Chief Diversity Officer, and his aim is clear. Do what he can to help open a path for future Army leaders and to make the force as diverse as the nation it defends." Untweet. Unquote, I guess. Anyway, so people made fun of that. And I'll link to the article because some of the poking of fun is quite hilarious, but it just reminded me of just my brief memory of all the Army mottos. When I was young and growing up, the motto was, be all you can be. Be all that you can be in the Army. Remember that? That's right. That's why when we got to boot camp, they said, you know, if you can't be a Marine, be all you can be. Join the Army. That was the joke, okay, when I was young. And then there came the Army of One. Remember that one under, I think that was Barack Obama. I'm not familiar with the song because I wasn't paying attention at that point. And I think the new motto for the Army is going to be, do what you can. Because Chief Diversity Officer, Colonel Timothy Holman, his objective is to do what he can to help open the path and make the force diverse. Join the Army. Do what you can. Yes, all right. That's from the Decline and Fall file. Ladies and gentlemen, not everyone in the military is a hero worthy of your worship. In fact, none of them are worthy of your worship. And most of them are just, they're all right. Okay, now, from the Opposite Day file. Did you know today is Opposite Day? April Fool's Day is coming up very shortly, but this is Opposite Day here on the Weekly Worldview. Former President Bill Clinton. Let's see here now. has been joined by Kamala Harris. She joined him last week. Let's see here. At an event hosted by the Clinton Foundation. The Clinton Foundation is still around? Being a ruling leftist means never running out of money. Because I remember their donations went through the floor when everyone found out Hillary was not going to be the president. I thought the Clinton Foundation's money would all dry up, but no. Because she still has something on enough people that she's still getting plenty of donations. And there are a lot of people still so guilty about all the abortions they had and all the abortions they funded that they are hell-bent to see Hillary Clinton be a billionaire. Just for the sake of that. Anyway, how did I get off on that? Let's see. Kamala Harris joined Bubba Bill Jeff Clinton for an event hosted by the formerly absent Clinton Foundation. The event was focused on, quote, empowering women and girls in the U.S. and around the world. Now, you got an event with Bill Clinton and you're going to mention women and girls? I just find it a little bit uncomfortable. Nobody sees the irony here. Listen to what Kamala said to Bill Clinton in front of God and everybody with a straight face. She said, I know you. During the course of your presidency, but your life's work, you have always focused on the issue of poverty and what we must do to lift folks out of poverty. Sound like she took a sleep. And how come that chick always sounds like she just woke up? So you notice, let's see here now. So Kamala says this, and leading all of those of us who are educated beyond Google and our social media feed to ask, when you say, I know you, do you mean that like in the biblical sense? Or, I mean, we know how you made your career, Kamala, and we kind of know Bill's reputation. So when you open and close one eye and shut it, and then the other one opens and closes, and she says, I know you throughout your presidency and your career. Anyway, no matter how she means it, the one thing she doesn't mention in addressing Bill Clinton at the big event to empower women and girls, she doesn't mention women or girls or empowering anyone. She mentions poverty and lifting folks out of poverty, which Bill Clinton used to try to do that with certain prostitutes in Little Rock and probably in Washington, too, but never managed to lift them out of poverty for very long, from what we understand. But anyway, the irony, that's the opposite day. Bill Clinton and, by the way, Bill Clinton, let me remind you, WorldNet Daily reminds us, has been the subject of credible accusations of sexual assault and rape. Uh-huh. And he flew on Jeffrey Epstein's airplane at least 26 times and went to his island on a number of occasions. So hence the ironic nature and the opposite day, and I guess I have to look that up. I want to go now to the justice file, because this is just a story that it's awful, but it's one that that you like to hear. So it starts out awful. Evelyn K. Day. Evelyn K. Day's body was discovered in the backseat of her car on November 27, 1979. She had been sexually assaulted and strangled to death with the belt of her overcoat. DNA from her attacker was obtained at the time of the crime, but no arrests were made. Then in 2020, last year, a detective sent the suspected killer's DNA profile to the Colorado Bureau of Investigation to be compared against the public database, and it matched. It matched a guy. Do I want to give his whole name? His name is, do I want to give his whole name? I always debate whether or not to even mention these guys. I'm not going to give his whole name. His last name is Dye. D-Y-E, Dye. Dye, it was discovered after a brief investigation that he lived in the same area as Evelyn K. Day. He was enrolled as a student at the same college as Evelyn. And he had a lengthy criminal record, including arrests in 1977 for second-degree sexual assault, 1981 for sexually assaulting a child, and attempted sexual assault, and third-degree assault in 1982. Anyway, before and after the murder of Evelyn K. Day, the justice system was responsible for keeping Dye alive, for keeping the murderer alive. Before and after, the justice system inflicted this guy's rightful punishment upon the innocent. That's what they did. Before he killed her and after he killed her. And now he's finally been caught and he still will not get what he deserves. And I want to go there and I want to put my hands on his neck and I want to strangle him down myself. And I'm sure that's the way her father and her brother and her cousins and nephews and nieces, I'm sure that's how they all feel. I hope that's how they all feel. If there's any men left in America, instead of lighting a candle and having a vigil, should be driving down to the courthouse, driving down to the prison, and demanding the right to kill this bastard. Quit your whining. Stop crying. Stop mourning. Somebody's got to get pissed off eventually I mean, what's wrong with you people? How do we tolerate these kind of maniacs? This guy was this second degree sexual assault? He should have been executed in 1977. All right, I'm getting angry. I'm sorry about that. No, I'm not sorry. I'm just the way it is. Now, the Queer New World File. We go to the Queer New World File, where last week Robert Hoagland was arrested at the Supreme Court office in British Columbia, in Vancouver. Why? He was speaking against the court-ordered testosterone injections being given at that moment to his teenage daughter. What did he do? Did he burst into the room and attack the doctors and stop them from giving her the shots? No. He merely spoke out against it. And in doing so, he was arrested and he was denied bail. And he is confined to prison at this moment until he is put on trial for something like contempt of court, I suppose. So this is for speaking out against them transitioning his daughter against his will. Jordan Peterson, the famous anti-psychopath. Jordan Peterson's he's no great philosopher in my opinion, but he believes that transgendered insanity is indeed insane, which is a fairly low bar, but you know, we appreciate Jordan standing up and pointing out the obvious that transitioning is insane. Anyway, Jordan Peterson, the famous Canadian conservative, had predicted such imprisonment would be inevitable back when he took his stand against the pronoun laws in Canada. The pronoun laws? What an Orwellian term. I mean, Orwell couldn't have dreamed that there would be pronoun laws. Because even Orwell, being as almost clairvoyant as he was about the socialist march through history, couldn't have predicted the whole pervert angle as dramatic as it's gone. Anyway, the British Columbia Supreme Court ordered Hoagland's daughter begin receiving testosterone injections at 14 years old, regardless of parental consent. The court declared that if either of the girl's parents referred to her as a girl or with female pronouns, that parent would be considered guilty of family violence. So that would be as if they beat her and put cigarette butts out on her forearm. Same thing, calling her a girl. Anyway, here's what Robert Hoagland has to say. He says, what kind of father would I be if, let's say, in 5 or 10 years, my daughter, she turns to me and she says, why did none of you do anything to stop this? I was a child. I was an immature kid. I was thinking something this was great, Dad. Why didn't you say something? And he says, when my daughter asks me, I'll say, I did everything that I possibly could. And we appreciate Mr. Hoagland standing up and speaking out. And if he does decide to kick in the doors and tackle the doctor, we're all with him on that one, too. I'm your host, Doug McBurney, and that was the Queer New World File, and we're not sad for Mr. Hoagland, we're not mourning for Mr. Hoagland and his daughter, we're not expressing solidarity with them, we don't want to hold their hands, we don't want to light a candle, we don't want to start a GoFundMe page, We're angry. We're angry about this. Almost to the point of arms, I'm telling you. That's how angry I am about the fact that a court could order a child to be mutilated, to chemically mutilated, physically mutilated, and order the parents as to what pronouns. At what point do we not take up arms against these insane people? At what point? And I mean, I don't want to encourage, I don't know what I want to encourage. I'm telling you that I'm getting really, it's getting past the point of where I can take this. But all right. I'm probably going to get myself arrested, right, for insurrection. Let's go to reason number 1,198 to keep or get your children out of the government schools. Speaking of automatic anything, automatic criminality. The Ohio Public Schools have assigned freshman students to read a poetry book about a girl who liberates herself by abandoning her Christian faith and engaging in promiscuity. In the book, the character who does this is a minor, making this publication criminal. That's criminal to publish about a minor person, isn't it? Is it not criminal anymore to depict a minor child? No, I guess once it's legal to burn down a police station, it kind of gets harder and harder to draw the line, right? The big flinch leads us to where? I mean, nothing will be criminal. There in the Ohio Public Schools, if the parents don't want their children to read this particular book that I will not name, their child has to opt out. So the criminality, the criminal act that's going to be executed against your child in the Ohio Public Schools, that's automatic. You have to opt out. It's built in. You can opt out, but it's built in. So the criminality is built into the system now. You have to opt out. The president of the Columbus-based Center for Christian Virtue, the Christian Post calls this fellow an expert, and I don't know if that means he used to be a spurt, and he got on to doing something else or what. But here's what he has to say. Christians who object have to change their strategy, because as soon as they manage to make a school stop doing something objectionable, like teaching sexually explicit content, they'll find another way to do it. There's no meaningful accountability measures in place. When a public school is failing and ignoring parents, they get more money. There's no incentive to stop schools from doing harm to children. Unquote. That's the expert laying out the problem. I can't argue with anything he said right there. It does seem like every time we stop the schools from doing something completely criminal and insane and disgusting, they find another way to do it. You stop them for a season, they're back the next season. The wolves are always at the door. Here's what his expert advice is. None of this will stop until universal school choice is a reality. There are no market forces on public schools. Unquote. Says the expert. So this is the expert opinion to guide the Christians. I think what he's suggesting here is that we all fund the Republican Party for another 40 or 50 years like we all did to end abortion. Remember that one? Now, with child killing, it was that they were going to get us a conservative Supreme Court. We're going to overturn Roe versus Wade. Rah, rah, rah. And we all wrote our checks. With this one, it's going to be school choice, oh, elect Republicans, we're going to get you school choice. And by the time you get there, everyone in the school will have been mutilated and sexually molested. And you'll have a choice of which school you can have your son castrated at. Get your kids out of the government schools. It doesn't matter. There is no choice. You have no choice. You want to talk about a choice? I'll give you two choices. Send your kid into the temple of Molech to be sacrificed to Baal, or get him out of the government schools. That's all. How do I know it's gotten this bad? Well, from the decline and fall file, the United States Senate has just confirmed Mike Levine as Assistant Secretary of Health. Why is this of note? Because Mike goes by Rachel and has mutilated himself physically, biologically, medically. He's had himself, he's had something removed or added or something like that. Mike previously served as Pennsylvania's Secretary of Health. He also previously dressed like a man, called himself Mike, but now he's... He tries to dress like a woman, but he doesn't stand like it. So somebody sent me a post of all of the politicians up on the stage, and there were a half a dozen women and a half a dozen men. And the women all stand with their feet either straight ahead or their feet are slightly pointing toward each other, like in a pigeon toe way, right? But the men all stand all man spread with their feet pointing out. And there's old Mike up there with his wig on and his makeup and his shoes are pointing northeast and northwest. Mike, sorry, buddy. Anyway, but the Senate confirmed him. So the United States Senate has confirmed Mike Levine. And I'm not sure if his name was Mike, by the way. I thought Mike was appropriate because it's a masculine name. Biden, that's Joe Biden, the puppet installed by them. And if you need me to be clear, I'll send you a list of them. They installed Biden. Biden said that Levine will get people through this pandemic, no matter their sexual orientation, gender identity, or disability. What? What's that, Joe? Are you lumping in people with different sexual orientations and gender identity in with the disabled? What? Is this some, are you implying this is some sort of disability, Mr. Biden? Oh, wait a minute. Disabilities are good, so. Well, it's Joe Biden. So being Joe Biden means you never have to say you're sorry. You never even have to make sense. You never even have to know what you're saying. You'll never be held accountable. Until they decide to get rid of you, Joe, and then it's going to happen in a moment. Joe Biden's fall from grace will be the fastest, most precipitous political fall we've ever seen in all of American history. You watch. That's my prediction for Joe. Anyway, going to get you through the pandemic no matter your sexual orientation. What else? Let's see here. Levine, by the way, Mike Levine, touted a January 2020 study. This was before the pandemic hysteria, when the transgendered hysteria was two or three notches lower, believe it or not. Somehow the pandemic amplified the transgender delusion. The pandemic delusion has somehow amplified the transgender delusion. Do the math on that one for me. Figure that one out, will you? I can't figure it out. Anyway, before the pandemic, Levine touted a 2020 study that declared puberty-blocking drugs to be beneficial for young children, and Mike Levine himself recommended accelerating cross-sex hormones for homeless teens. Homeless teens? You mean like the ones in your basement, Mike? I think we need to go and inspect Mike's house, for crying out loud. Oh, I meant allegedly in his basement. We don't. Finally, ladies and gentlemen, Chuck Schumer says, quote, by virtue of being in the public spotlight, Mike will help break down barriers. I'm sorry, I'm Rachel. Can we start that over again? By being in the public spotlight, Rachel will help break down barriers of ignorance and fear, said Chuck Schumer, to which anyone with a rational sense of decency and just normality, you don't have to be a paragon of virtue to understand that the Senate confirming a tranny to a major position is a big time milestone, a big time landmark along the highway to hell there for civilization. But Mr. Schumer is exactly correct in what he says. This breaks down barriers. It does. The barriers that used to keep civilization on the rails and from flying off the rails into utter perversion, corruption, criminality, and which always leads to mass murder and world war and a bloodbath of unimaginable proportion, towards which we are careening out of control at this moment. Folks, forget breaking down barriers. Forget helping to relieve ignorance. It is better to be ignorant of and exercise reasonable fear of sexual perversion being normalized. That's it's better to be ignorant and afraid of that. Better to be ignorant and afraid than to see sexual perversion normalized, especially at the highest reaches of civic life. Because if they can do that up in public, on the stage, in front of God and everybody, imagine what they're going to do with your children when you're not in the room. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm your host, Doug McBurney, and running out of time, so I got to come back. We'll get back with all of that. I wanted to have some fun on the show, and but it's gotten a little intense. But I was hoping that I could talk about how eating a street taco while driving, it only works if you don't care about the upholstery of the vehicle. So I was lucky enough this past week to find myself eating a couple of pork street tacos while driving down the street. And I was in a vehicle in which I did not care about the upholstery, because otherwise I probably would have had a car accident. Because by the time I got home, there was a grease spot and onions and cilantro and everything right down there in that triangle between the legs. So if I'd have been driving a car, like if I'd have been driving a new car, I probably would have careened off into a ditch trying to keep the onions and the grease off there. So see, these were some of the fun topics that we were going to talk about before I got into the trannies and the perverts and the testosterone. I was going to make fun of the old lady at the doctor's office who wouldn't come in because me and another guy were sitting in there not wearing masks. Why? Because whatever, we're not brainwashed morons. We weren't, but she wouldn't even enter. She stood outside in the cold so that the receptionist could see her through the window, right? As if she was in some sort of drama movie, right? With the icicles and I'm going to stand outside and freeze. Poor receptionist comes out. Excuse me, ma'am, do you have an appointment? Yes, I do, but I can't come in because they're not wearing masks. So me and the other guy, we're like, you know, we put on the mask. Sorry, lady. We didn't mean to scare. We put on the masks. She still wouldn't come in. Which at least she's reasonable. She knew that if we had already breathed all over the room, there was no point in coming in. So she stayed outside in the cold, probably catching pneumonia. She had to be 70 years old. Probably be the death of her. Ironically enough. You know, I was just pondering with my extremely attractive audio engineer earlier this week that like the grandma and grandpa generation are all the hippies now. It's not the World War II crew that we knew of, that, you know, the old people when I was young, they had courage and convictions, and there were just certain things about old people that you knew that they were together, right? Not, that's not so anymore. These are the kids of Woodstock, right? in the VW buses and the tune in, turn on, drop out. Now they're grandma and grandpa, and they're terrified and pathetic, and they're not together. They're an embarrassment. Your whole generation, all of you baby boomers, your whole generation, fairly embarrassing, not very impressive. Thank you very much. Hey, not that Generation X is much better. I'm sure we're worse. In fact, that gets me to, well, we'll get to this in a second. In fact, we'll probably close on all this because I'm running out of time, but we go to the end of the world file. Uh-huh. This will be found when people do the post-mortem. How is it that the world ended just right then? This will be one of the stories. This will be one of the pieces of evidence that's looked at. This is from Big League Politics. A whistleblower from a company called MindGeek that runs Pornhub and other pornography sites online. This whistleblower says, quote, "I am certain many of these so-called MindGeek models are being held in captive in trafficking situations all over the world." So what they have is they have these live, you can apparently pay to have a live girl on your computer screen and do whatever, right? Okay, it's a pornographic thing. He says these are slaves. That's what the whistleblower says, that these women are, he says, trafficked, which we used to call that kidnapping. He goes on to say women trying to escape North Korea are being held captive and forced into studios by their trafficker, which that would be their kidnapper, right? And he claims that the company, the parent company of the pornography sites, gets around culpability by using third-party vendors. This whistleblower calls for investigators to demand all of the parent company's financial records. And they'll find out that through their business units and pay sites and tube sites and cam sites and all their advertising networks, if the financial records were to be investigated, this whistleblower says it would be clear that the scope of this problem is much larger than anyone realizes. So this is a massive kidnapping and slave trade operation that's going on right now in front of God and everybody on the internet every day. And this whistleblower says it's way bigger than just this one site. This is endemic. There exists now, and now listen to this. So that's bad, right? That's horrible to think that women are being enslaved to be on these pornographic websites. Are you shocked by that? Are you surprised? You should not be shocked or surprised. Pornography is criminal behavior. Criminal behavior leads to more criminal behavior, and it gets more and more defiled and disgusting and gross and more toxic and more vicious and evil and cruel. That's what criminal behavior leads to. More and more and more and more until the criminal kills himself and others. That's where criminal behavior leads. And that's what this is. And now listen to this. There now exists a social media platform that encourages young girls to post content of themselves for money on the internet. And as far as I can tell, this isn't like a dark web secret thing either. This is being done in a fairly public way. And the authors at Big League Politics say that this is driving global consumption of child pornography because these are mostly young girls who want to make money on the internet by basically peddling themselves in a pornographic way. The lax standards of this internet site allow young girls to make a false ID and then begin posting underage pornography of themselves and then distribute it for money. The authors at Big League Politics say this could be considered a form of child sex trafficking, and it is one that is already extremely pervasive throughout society. Okay. So I was talking with my brother on the phone the other day. My brother and I are about the same age. Both a couple of sad sack Generation X, right? We're as responsible for the collapse of Western civilization as any other average guy. I mean, we're not as responsible as Hillary Clinton and George Soros and Barack Obama and Chuck Schumer and Mike the Tranny. We're not as responsible as those guys. We're not as responsible as the guys who run these internet sites, but we're as responsible as the next guy, right? We were sleeping through time and space when it was all happening. But we were talking to each other. We said, can you imagine if when we were 14, if we had a device in our hand, a TV screen in our hand through which we could access pornography all the time? Would we have survived? And we both agreed that no, we wouldn't have survived. It would have completely destroyed us. In hindsight, in retrospect. Well, this is what's happened, ladies and gentlemen, to everyone on Earth right now. They have a device in their hand through which they can access pornography all the time. And this is the end of the world. The world will not survive this. It's never happened before in human history. It's not survivable. A remnant may survive, and that remnant, one of the first things they do when they put out all the fires, right, and they stop up all of the inflow of the rest of the world that's been burned and consumed and is now just a swirling eddy of fire and molten lava, once they stop all that and they manage to find themselves an island, a brief respite where they can again begin civilization, the first thing they'll do is say pornography is illegal. Because it's going to be very obvious to that remnant who survive exactly what it was that took out the world, or at least the civilized world. And it will be that and things like that. Now, from the History Rhymes file, we have a story from the American Thinker by Bob McGuffey and Anthony Stark. They say over recent decades, there's been an attack, an ongoing assault against our institutions, traditions, and against good and decent people. A relentless assault that is now a grave crisis. They say this crisis will be momentous, consequential, and we will be profoundly changed by it. They call this current crisis that we are all in, they say we've experienced similar existential crises. They point out the American Revolution, the Civil War, the Great Depression, World War II. They see each of these brought about transformations. There appears to be little doubt the nation has entered another such crisis, a transformational crisis, which is what we are in right now. They term it the seventh crisis. And this is based on their 1997 book, The Fourth Turning. I'm sorry, not their book. They base this article on a 1997 book called The Fourth Turning, where demographers William Strauss and Neil Howe viewed history through a generational lens. Their compelling account organizes Anglo-American history into seven repeating cycles, starting in the 15th century. They make the case that man's nature, as forged by generations, drives history through amazingly similar cycles. And they do this by distinguishing four generations. The generations are determined by the phase into which you were born. Hence, I talked about the baby boomers and Generation X, and then whatever's next here. We'll go. They use the Roman term, seculum, for a lifetime. As the generations are born, mature, age, and pass away, they give each seculum a seasonal and cyclical quality. And there are many recurring patterns. These patterns identify each of these phases, and these are the four phases they identify. The high, the awakening, the unraveling, and the crisis. And for us, they say the high was the post-war era, followed by the awakening of the 60s, the 70s, and then the unraveling. When did the unraveling begin? The 80s and the 90s. And then when did the crisis begin? The crisis began in the early 2000s. And this is the second such, I'm sorry, this is the seventh such phase from the 15th century. The current generational configuration consists of baby boomers, Gen X, millennials, and Gen Z. And they say we are entering into a new crisis, the seventh crisis, that will force millennials to make the consequential choices affecting the fate of the American Republic for good or ill. So it will fall to the millennials. So generation, the baby boomers, they squandered everything that the World War II generation gave them. Generation X, we just wallowed in it because we were told it would be okay. We could just wallow in it. The millennials, they just got depressed all about it, put on black fingernail polish and dabbled in homosexuality and witchcraft. And the millennial generation was the first in which you could just be like a Satan worshiper and it was okay. Goth and all of that. And now Generation Z are their children. Anyway, so it's going to fall to the millennials to save civilization, which would indicate to me that civilization is pretty much over. But listen to what the authors say. They say, it is the failure of the elites, the government, the big corporations, big tech, and big media that has brought us to the precipice of an economic and social disaster. And worse, they seek to exploit the crisis in order to expand their control over society. So the second half of that I agree with. The establishment, the ruling left, which they call big tech, big corporations, yada, whatever. The ruling left. These are the people who are not in a conspiracy. They're just generally of like mind. They want more money, more power, and they hate God. And so they naturally tend to go the same way. And they want to, they definitely want to exploit this crisis. And in part, they're responsible for it. In a large part, this particular latest, they created it. But it's not the failure of the elites that caused this. It's not the failure of the government. It's the failure of each one of us. You and me. And our fathers. And our sons. It's a failure of us. That has allowed them to be in a position to exploit all this. It's been our own failure, a little bit at a time, to couple the nature of man, the fallen nature of man, with the ubiquitous availability of realistic pornography all the time, and I'm sorry, you don't survive that. None of us can survive that. Only Jesus Christ can save us from that. Follow him, and all of your notions that these authors express about ordered liberty and individual liberty, follow Jesus Christ, and all of your notions about all of that can flourish. Remove him from the equation and go down with the ship, Mr. McGuffey, Mr. Stark, the American thinker. Remove Jesus Christ from the equation, searching for the solution, and you'll go down with the ship. I mean, albeit with the best intellectual argument amongst the drowning, you will have the best intellectual argument amongst the drowning. But unless you bring Jesus Christ back into the equation, we're not going to find the solution. Because only the power of Jesus Christ can stand up to the power of that device in your hand with the access to everything wicked and corrupt and perverted that can destroy your mind and the world all the time. Only Jesus Christ can stand up against that. So without him, it's all over. I'm sorry. Whether you're a millennial, whether you're Gen X, whether you're a baby boomer, whether you're Gen Z, we all need the same thing. We need someone to save us from all this, from the coming catastrophe. And here at the Weekly Worldview, we are always willing to tell you exactly who that is. It's not me, and it's not my father, and it's not my son. It is the Father and the Son, Jesus Christ. That's the only hope we have against all of this. The only thing that will prevent us from taking arms up against one another and destroying one another is to look to him. And so I encourage you to do that, and that's it for the Weekly Worldview. I want to thank my friends at American Right to Life and at Real Science Radio and at the Personhood Alliance and my other brother, Daryl, who makes it all happen. Here in the Weekly Worldview studios, should the Lord tarry, we will return next week. And until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.